Hello, and welcome to episode 17 of Leadership Amplified. I'm Dr. Karen Morley, and I'm delighted to bring you another episode profiling ordinary leaders who are doing extraordinary things. Leadership Amplified is about bringing to you the stories of leaders who are great role models, ones who inspire us to continue to work on developing leadership as a service to others and to our organizations. And Emily Smith, today's guest, is a great example of that. Emily is located up in lovely Port Macquarie in Australia, and she's the head of network delivery at Essential Energy. She had a previous role in Essential Energy as manager of works delivery and enablement, previously also worked at GrainCorp as capital delivery manager, was a project manager there, and before that was the managing director for the Territory Medical Group in the Northern Territory. Emily has done a range of different development programs and activities. She's a member of the Australian Institute of Company Directors, and she participated in the Cranlana Centre for Ethical Leadership program quite recently. So, Emily, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for setting the time aside to have a conversation about your leadership. And Leadership Amplified is really focused on leadership as a service to others as well as to the organization. And I think the focus of the conversation that we've talked about today, really around both your leadership but also inclusive leadership and how you do that during COVID when it becomes more difficult, I think is going to be an absolutely fantastic topic of conversation. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me along, Karen. Really excited to be here.
Yeah, brilliant. All right, so I love to start off these podcast episodes by getting a sense of your leadership story. So, tell us a bit about how you began your leadership career. Some people do go, back to very early beginnings. You don't necessarily need to do that, but I mean, you've got such an interesting range of experiences, in a medical group, in GrainCorp, and now in Essential Energy. So, would love to hear your leadership story.
Sure, thanks, Karen. Yeah, I guess it's a fairly diverse kind of history. I don't know how far to go back. I don't want to give my age away today. But look, we'll start with medicine. And look, I started out in medical education and pharmaceutical education when I was younger, and then kind of moved into more of the corporate medicine space, private medicine, and built a career in that area. It was really interesting. It was challenging. I didn't have a medical degree, but always had a focus on business, and leadership. And I think I probably built a lot of the skills that I rely on now in that space because it was exciting and challenging, and we were growing practices from scratch very quickly, and recruiting mixed specialties into general practice and doing lots of things people weren't really doing at the time. So it was a pretty exciting way to develop as a leader. And I think part of that is learning how to fall over and pick yourself back up and admit when things aren't going very well and ask for help when you need it and all those sorts of things that perhaps when you're younger in your leadership journey, you're perhaps not as humble as you become as you get a bit older and you want to be great at everything and you want to be seen to be always getting everything right. So I think I learned some hard lessons along the time, but also, learned a lot about developing really strong relationships with people and how important that is. Then I kind of made the jump. I left the area where I was living and wanted to bring up my boys in a regional community. That was really important to me. I didn't want to move into a big city, and so ended up taking up a role with GrainCorp, which was a wonderful experience. But in terms of leadership, I really identified, I took some time to think about what really interests me, what is a gap, what's something I need to develop, rather than just simply moving into another kind of medical-based role. And I didn't have a project management specific qualification, and I really wanted to pursue that and kind of really understand project management. And this opportunity came up with GrainCorp. And I remember the interview, and they had a silo, a picture of a silo, and they said, "Oh, we want to cut a hole in the side of the silo. So what would you do? And I was just looking at these two men thinking, I have no idea what to do with this silo. Why are you even, why is this an interview question?
Yeah.
But what I did say was I'd go and ask an engineer. I'd go and ask an expert. You know, I was quite honest. I wouldn't know what to do with this silo, but I'd certainly go and find out. And then I'd make sure that I checked how to run the project, and then I'd run it. And you know, thankfully they gave me the job. And the person that interviewed me, Steve, was just a wonderful role model for women in business and women mm-hmm. in operational roles. And this was an absolute operational role, building railway lines and silos and lots of brownfields work and that sort of thing. And I was familiar with running projects because I'd built medical practices, but this was a totally different ball game. Very male dominated industry. But Steve really did everything he could to make space for me and to make me feel like, even though perhaps I didn't know much about grain or silos or railway lines or any of those things, that, you know, I had a really important role to play and I could add a lot of value. And so, you know, having mm-hmm. his backing in that environment really helped me develop develop my confidence in a different space, because I knew what I was doing in medicine. I knew what I was doing in medical construction. I knew what I was doing in recruiting, but I was really kind of on the back foot. And I'd gone from running my own business to actually reporting to someone. So that was an interesting, good journey for me to experience, to actually kind of take that different role and shift gears, in that you've got to actually go and check with someone. Someone's got to give you permission to do that, all those sorts of things. So that was a great journey. We went through transformation and I was the capital delivery manager there, and that was great, you know, working on big things with big teams and really exciting and challenging. And then the opportunity came up with Essential Energy, looking after network delivery there. So that's really diverse as well. So partly field-based roles. We've got some great teams doing vegetation management and asset inspection and meter reading and all those sorts of things, but also really important office space roles as well, looking after our analytics and our administration functions and inventory and logistics, so running all the warehouses. So, you know, quite a diverse portfolio. Again, fairly male-dominated industry, lot people with really significant tenure. So, you know, different challenges, but I think all the things that I've learned kind of coming into this role, all the knocks that you take and all the things that do go well, you know, you kind of bring those across into new roles. But I think the one constant through each of those different kind of industries has been really strong kind of leadership and mentoring, and, you know, whether it be informal or formal, from people who've really championed me to keep going in perhaps what weren't kind of traditional based roles. So I think that's really, it's really helped me, and so now I feel a very strong responsibility to make sure that myself as a leader are fostering those opportunities for other people that are coming through, whether they're in my industry or others. That you know, I think you said it in the what the course I did with you, the inclusion influences, you can't be what you can't see. So, you know, really taking that responsibility now to kind of foster those important mentoring relationships.
And sort of pay it forward, I guess, is exactly how we're talking about that. So I'm really interested, Emily, in just reflecting on all of that in terms of, like, when did you start to see yourself as a leader, and when did you start to think consciously, if you like, about what leading meant to you? You know, you've talked about different people who helped you along the way, so maybe part of that came through conversations, but I'm always really interested in understanding when people think about and understand themselves to be leaders, and what creates that sense of being a leader.
It's an interesting question. I think I've always been interested in leadership, and I was always well read on it, and certainly always, I'm very curious about people, and I spend a lot of time observing people and the way they act and, you know, think and make decisions. So I've always been thinking along that path. But I think you'd, for me, until you were in a really challenging situation and you really stop and take stock and start thinking very deliberately and thoughtfully about how am I going to approach this? Like, rather than just reacting, I think that shift for me in leadership was just perhaps always being a bit reactive, like reacting to his situations, rather than turning it into somewhere where I was actually thinking ahead and being more pragmatic and trying to anticipate what was going to happen and thinking a bit more, taking a bit more of a balcony view of things. And I think that probably didn't happen until, you know, I was well into kind of running my own business, to be honest. You know, I think prior to that, I was kind of perhaps a bit like a bit gung-ho. Yeah, I know what I'm doing. It'll all work out in the end. But, you know, rather kind of actually starting to think more strategically. And I think that's probably when I started to hit my straps in terms of leadership, because I was being thoughtful and deliberate, not just doing everything from your gut. And I'm not saying don't do things from your gut, because I actually think your gut's a pretty good way to run. But I think you need to balance that with a certain level of pragmatism and thoughtfulness. So I think that was the shift for me. And I don't, you know, I think for me, I'm always learning. I consider myself a student of leadership. I'm always learning. I haven't cracked it. I certainly probably do things wrong regularly, but I think I do have a deliberate and thoughtful focus now that perhaps I didn't have years ago.
Yeah. And I think that's some of the magic that a lot of people who are developing their leadership skills and approach are working on doing. How in the busy fray, when there's so many things to do and life and decisions and roles become more complex for people, how do you take the time? So when you're being thoughtful and deliberate, what does that look like?
I think, you know, we're going to talk later, as you mentioned at the outset, around, you know, kind of COVID and how that's impacted us and how we can be inclusive in that frame. But I think COVID's been a real test of that for everyone, because suddenly we've become even more busy. And, you know, I know for many, particularly in my organisation, but I know many other of my colleagues that I speak to in other industries, you know, we're back to back in Zoom meetings. There's no time to think about things or develop a strategy or a plan, or, you know, I felt very much that sense of starting to react again and going back to that kind of more reactive leadership style. So for me, that being thoughtful and deliberate is actually even taking time. You know, I've got a wonderful coordinator, Christy, who works with me, taking time to actually together looking at my calendar and going, what can I actually not do? What can I delegate, or what to actually create some space to think? Because I think for a leader, if you don't have time to think, then you'll start to feel things fall away, and things will start to feel like perhaps they're getting a little bit out of control. So I'm not saying I always do that very well, and some days are ridiculous, but other days, you know, having that time to think and plan and anticipate what might be coming, I mean, they're the really good days. And if it means you have to do it at the end of the day at 7 o'clock at night, well, so be it, or you get up a bit earlier the next morning. But I think you have to be quite strict with yourself to actually create some time, because if you don't, you know, you're doing yourself a disservice.
And of course, as a leader, you're doing others a disservice too if you can't make that kind of sense, as well as role model that kind of approach.
Correct. There's no point telling people to create time and knock off early and do all those sorts of things, and they can see you're online and not doing
that's
any of
you
those
keep
things.
Sending them emails.
Yes,
and that doesn't work.
Again, I said to you, I'm not perfect, and I do that occasionally. In fact, I accidentally sent one last night, and afterwards I went, "Oh, what a should have left it in the drafts." Anyway, so nobody's perfect, and I think that's probably there's the key, isn't it? You shouldn't don't expect perfection from your team. You don't expect it from yourself either. You know, be a bit kind to yourself.
Give yourself a break. Yeah. There are a couple of things you also talked about. One was the importance of having mentors and people who championed you. So how did that happen, and what do you think was the value for you from those mentors and champions?
I think earlier in my career it was all very informal, but there are, when I reflect on it, there are people that absolutely opened doors for me in terms of introductions or letting me know something was coming, or do you know what I mean? Like just giving you a heads up on things. So, just developing strong relationships in industry and outside of industry is really a good thing to do. I don't think I'm that great at networking. I don't really love small talk. It always kind of makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable, but I love just, one-on-one chats with people and that sort of thing. So I think it's about finding that space that you feel comfortable to interact with people and start to build some relationships that will assist you. I think a mentoring relationship, whether it be formal or informal, works well when you're really open to getting some feedback. I think often people look for people who just kind of help you with your confirmation bias that just confirm,
Yes, right.
yes, you're doing a great job. Yes, everyone else is wrong and you're right, and those sorts of things. So actually finding people that might just challenge you a little bit and give you the feedback perhaps that you need to hear, and maybe that might be a little bit hard sometimes. I think it's good to be confident. I think it's good, you've got to have your own back a lot of the times, but you've also got to balance that with actually maybe your way isn't always the right way. And hearing other people's perspective and maybe trying to do things a different way because someone has suggested it to you. So I think developing those relationships where people can challenge you has really helped me. So yeah, finding people that have had, I think I would summarize that by saying finding people that challenge you to be better has really helped me throughout my career.
And I was going to say, so if you're thinking about somebody who's seeking mentoring from others, how would you suggest they sort of pitch that and position that so that both they become more open themselves, but also that that sets up that expectation and almost that permission from the mentor to give the feedback?
Yeah, I think if you've already started or you're about to establish a mentoring relationship, I think being clear from the outset on what you're hoping to achieve from it and being really honest, not just with yourself, but with the person you're wanting to catch up with. Because if you just want someone to fluff your feathers, then just tell them that. I just need someone to make me feel better because I've got imposter syndrome or whatever it is. But if you say, look, I think I'm doing okay, but I find this really challenging, or I avoid doing this, I think that's a good one to talk about. The thing that you wake up in the middle of the night and you think, oh, I have to do that tomorrow, and you put it off all day until the end of the day. They're good things, I think, to talk with your mentor about, because if you're avoiding it, it is probably something you feel perhaps you're a little bit weaker in, or those sorts of things. But that
Fantastic,
being with that being said, I don't always think you have to try and work on everything that's wrong or isn't your strongest area. Sometimes you're better off to just go, I think I'm pretty good at these three things. I want to get better at them. And finding someone that does that well and saying, look, I see you do that. I really admire it, or that's something I aspire to do. Can we spend some time? Can you give me some hints and tips and kind of strengthen a muscle rather than just trying to develop something that's simply not there?
Yeah, love it, love it. That sounds great. I remember coming across the idea of having a board of advisors a number of years ago. And so, in what you've just said, there's a number of different things that you could get from a mentoring relationship. It might be just one, but actually, it might be several. So, you've got someone who's a real critical friend, if you like, who's going to say it tough. And really give you the feedback. And you might have someone else that you can just go and vent to who's going to be the real supporter. And you might have someone who comes, from outside of the organization who's got, again, a quite different perspective. And I think that you might get that in one person, but you might get that from several different people.
Yeah, and I think that's why, a lot of people think, okay, I've set up a formal mentoring relationship, tick, and move on to the next thing, rather than sort of going, well, to be more well-rounded, maybe I need to have lots of conversations. And even outside of a mentoring conversation, if I have an interaction and I think, oh, that probably didn't go as well as I expected, or I start making up a story in my mind about what actually happened, I'll check myself with someone else and I'll say, hey, I'm making up a story that this happened. Did this happen? And that, often they'll come back and go, that's not, I was in the same meeting with you. That did not happen. Or yes, perhaps you could have gone about that in a gentler way, but you really have to invite that in, and people have to feel like it's okay. And it's hard, perhaps don't always do that with your direct reports, because they'll go, I think it was really good, because it's really hard to say to someone you report to, and I'd feel this myself, oh, I don't think you did that very well. So, yeah. You know, but pick your mark for those sorts of interactions.
And you talked about also the working in a male-dominated area and some of the challenges of that, but also being in operations, which we know is really important for women in terms of getting to, you know, the top. Having operational roles is pretty important. So, again, what lessons did you learn from that experience?
I think. Oh, this one might be a little bit controversial, so I'll think about how to
oh,
frame
good.
It. But here we go. A few minutes in, I'm already being controversial. No, look, I think one of my earlier experiences in a kind of male-dominated operational environment is that you see many women kind of shaping themselves to their environment and starting to be a little bit less whatever they normally are. So if you're quite, you know, quite feminine, and maybe you'll start to just kind of dumb that down or hide that away a little bit, or jokes that you wouldn't accept in your friendship group, you'd call someone out and go, oh God, please, you know, don't. You start to kind of laugh a little bit to them, even though you don't think they're funny, and they actually make you feel really uncomfortable. You know, they're little subtle things, but when you are over a period of time, you can find yourself start to really change. And I guess for myself, it was about starting to notice that and going, I'm going to make people a little bit uncomfortable, and I'm just going to be who I am. And just like everyone else in this working environment is, it's actually okay for me to be who I am as well. So, I think that's challenging. I think it takes a lot of courage. And I'm not talking about every time someone puts a foot wrong that you call them out in front of everyone and humiliate them. That doesn't really work. It's about, you know, pulling someone aside later and saying, oh, hey, that wasn't cool. That made me really uncomfortable, just in a one-on-one way. Or if you can't do that, talking to the person you report to just kind of say, hey, can you help me out in this space? And, you know, those sorts of things, it takes time. And it certainly takes a lot of courage, but I think they're subtle things that kind of chip away at you over time. So I think being conscious and talking about them and talking about actually naming how you feel about that can be quite empowering. You know, I feel uncomfortable, and it's okay for me to feel uncomfortable. Yeah. And I don't have to change who I am to fit into this environment. This environment needs to adjust to fit me.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, people can feel a sort of a gradual erosion, or maybe you don't even feel it. It's like the frog in the simmering water. You know, you don't actually notice all the simmering until it's sort of too late and you feel a sense of erosion.
Yeah, and it might be somebody else points it out to you. Somebody else might say, hey, I've noticed that you've really changed. You know, what's going on with that? You know, and sometimes I think we all have to adapt a little bit to any new working environment. I'm not saying you don't adapt at all, but I don't think you have to fundamentally change to fit into something, because nobody else is willing to make a change. And I think as we're talking about leadership today, so as a leader, you need to be conscious of, you might be coming into an environment where you're a female leader, and none of your direct reports have ever had a female leader before. So that's an adjustment for them, and they're going to have to kind of adapt, and so are you, to that environment. And conversely, as a male leader, you might have a female come into your working environment. You've never had a female direct report. So we need to do more to kind of empower and enable our leaders so that they know how to adapt their style to the person I'm leading. You know, you might be used to really transactional. I'm a leader, I'm operations, it's all transactional stuff. And you've got to shift gears and kind of go, hey, how was your weekend? And actually not just talk about something you would only talk about with your male work colleagues. You might have to broaden your horizon a little bit. So I think that's an area that a lot of people are becoming more conscious of not just one kind of style of leadership just doesn't work anymore. You've really got to be able to adapt as a leader. And I think as a colleague and a team member, we've got to be able to adapt a little bit as well and make space for people.
And that, I think that works the two ways, as you say. It's not just about thinking about yourself and how you come into different groups, and the impact of that on you, and how to show up and, maintain your authenticity and be effective. But it's also for leaders thinking about not everybody is the same. And I think one of the things that we struggle with a little sometimes in terms of being inclusive is it feels like you need to treat everyone the same, and you sort of do, but actually you can't, because not everybody is the same. So it is a bit of a dilemma. So I'm interested in segueing to that other conversation, or part of the conversation that we want to have, which is around being inclusive and being inclusive as a leader. So what does that look like for you?
Well, I think for me, being inclusive as a leader is, as I said, really thinking about your leadership style and adapting that. I mean, we're talking a lot about men and women, but we might be talking about people from different backgrounds, or, any of our kind of diversity and inclusion considerations. But I think taking the time to really get to know people is really important, and it's a really important part of inclusive leadership, because if we talk about adapting your style, if you really haven't taken the time to understand what's important to a person in your team, how they tick, what motivates them, all those sorts of things, I think you're really going to miss the mark in terms of inclusivity, because you're really not understanding where a person's coming from. So, I mean, it sounds like a simple thing, but it's really, I think, quite critical. Being curious about people is actually a really, I think, a really important quality in any leader. Be curious, find out a little bit more, understand if someone's work's falling away, or they didn't respond properly in a meeting, or as you'd expect, or what else is going on? What can you do as a leader to support them in that environment? And maybe understanding that inclusivity, some people in your team might not understand why that's important. So, what's your role? How do you promote that? How do you get people to understand what their role is to be inclusive as well? And how do you kind of sell that message? I think some people feel like to be an inclusive leader, they've just got to go off on some personal crusade. I'm just going to change the world and I don't need anyone else to help. But actually, you want to get a whole heap of people on board with you that all want to do that as well. And, kind of help you champion that. It's not something that you can do alone. So I think role modeling inclusivity and kind of selling that message is really important. To kind of get other people on board, but not everyone understands, well, what you want a 50% quota. Well, what does that mean? But actually being able to talk about, well, if we're all inclusive, then we're going to be more creative, or we're going to solve problems better, or just distilling it down into fairly simple messages. But another part of inclusive leadership for me is just making sure people's voices get heard, and the quiet person. We're making sure that person, the new person, all those sorts of people are being recognised and are having an opinion. I think, Gallup do the engagement survey, and it's my opinion counts is a really important one. And I think in an inclusive sense, that is really important, because if you're not being inclusive, somebody's going to feel like they're on the outer, or their opinion doesn't count. So, I think
I
they're
said,
all.
yeah. So, and I think, I mean, they're all terrific things. And I think one of the things people kind of question is, like, how much of that do you do? Like, when you get to know people, how do you know what the boundary is? How do you not get too personal but be personal enough? How do you know if you do understand someone? How do you know how much voice, or how much space for voice, or the ways to give those opportunities for people to voice, their opinions, their concerns? So how do you kind of read the play, in a sense, when you go about leading?
Yeah, I think that's a really good one, and I think it's a challenge for everyone, because some people, if you spend too much time getting to know people, in fact, you know so much about them that there's no boundaries between you anymore. You can't maintain that kind of hierarchy that you need, because, well, actually, I'm actually responsible for this, and I need you to go and do it. So I would say that I don't always get that right either. So I think it's a conundrum for everyone. But I think it's a balance between making sure that people understand that they can trust you, and that you will follow through on the, you've built a relationship. I've got your back, and I'm going to have your back, as a leader. And you're creating, for me, it's about creating an environment where all those people are leaders as well, not a whole group of followers. So people are feeling empowered themselves and will, I think, read the play themselves as well, because you're really working with people who are, you are fostering as leaders themselves. I think if you kind of get into that parent-child, I'm the leader, you're my follower, that's where the boundaries really start to get blurred. And 20 years ago, if you read a leadership book, it was all about followers. Get your followers. Everyone should follow you. And I feel like that fosters a bit of a parent-child relationship, wherein my approach is more about, you're a leader in your own right. I know you. I support you. I have your back. I know what makes you tick. I know what ticks you off. However, you're a leader in your own right. So you are going to conduct yourself the right way, just like I do. So people will often pull themselves up from kind of overstepping that mark.
Yeah.
I think if you've got enough trust, you can even call it out gently, you know, hey, I'm going to make the call on this one, and here's why, and actually talk through that.
And implicit in what you're saying, it's, it's making, transparent what you're doing and what your expectations are, so people know, and then they can give you the feedback if they've got it for you, and you can give them the feedback too.
I think there's an element of consistency in that, Karen, that you really need. I think if you're to build that trust and to have people, I guess, know each other's boundaries, is being consistent. When people see you, they're always going to get the same kind of outcome when they interact with you, because you are consistent in your approach. I think that will build trust faster. I think when we see people kind of, you know, on Tuesday they're like this and on Wednesday they're like that, and I realize we're on a podcast and no one can see my hands, so perhaps I should I should articulate
what
that
was, but, up in the air,
up in the air. And you know, if you tell Emily bad news on Tuesday, it's happy days. If you tell her bad news on Wednesday, all hell's going to break loose, for example. I think that consistency really does help in that. But I think boundaries are tricky. So I'll leave that on the table there, because I think it's a challenge for everyone.
And what we did talk about earlier and is how you do all of that in the context of COVID. So when you're having those sorts of conversations face to face and you're being kind of reliable, consistent, building trust, asking sort of deeper questions, you've got a lot of non-verbal behavioral cues that you can pick up on so that you can take the lead from. In Zoom, constant Zoom meetings, as you said, how do you do that? What are the differences? How do you need to adjust in a virtual world so that you can continue to be an inclusive leader?
I think one of the biggest challenges, and I think most people found this, is going from being in a room with someone and just having a conversation with them and being able to watch their hands and watch them shift in their chair, or, you know, you can just sense a mood even when you walk into a room, and, you know, moving into the Zoom environment and losing all those cues and just being able to see little heads on the screen. And the more people in the meeting, the smaller their heads are, and the harder it is to kind of pick up on, I guess, the background story to a meeting. But I guess I'd counter that with, what you do have now that you never had before is the ability to stare at someone's face for half an hour, which in a normal meeting you'd never do that, because it would be, you know, incredibly rude. So I think we've all started to develop skills in that we are more able to read cues over Zoom than perhaps we could this time 12 months ago. So it's certainly something that I feel has developed for me. The other thing is that I can dial into a Zoom late, which I seem to do more regularly than I'd like, and I can sense the mood straight away, and I couldn't do that at the start. So I think we have adapted to an extent. However, I still think if you dial into a meeting late, for example, in a Zoom, no one says hello to you, for example. You know, so those common etiquette niceties have just kind of gone away. Like if you walked into a meeting room, everyone would, physically, people would nod their head or give you a wave or something. But now it's just like you're a ghost in the background, you know, those sorts of things, and you wonder when you should speak up. So I think there's perhaps some more etiquette we need to do around that to kind of make sure that people feel involved. But I also think having conversations outside of Zoom is really important, and we've really promoted that. If I've got a one-on-one with someone now, it is not a Zoom ever anymore. It's a phone call. And Karen, you and I were talking about this outside, but of this podcast, but particularly if you're going to have a difficult conversation, it is easier to do it over the phone because you can hear the change in tone that you lose a bit in Zoom sometimes. So I'd certainly promote that. I think there's lots of other ways of communicating as well to keep in contact with people or keep in touch or make them feel like you're thinking about them that don't take a lot of time, but really keep that connection strong. So we use Skype Messenger and we're just moving over to Teams now. And it takes a second to just message someone in your team and say, hello, how's your day? It's not a big thing, but it's actually, those little interactions I think are really, I love it. Luke, who I report to, will just text me sometimes and say, how's your day going? And it just makes your day. It's just a really nice thing to do. It's not a
Somebody's
big thing.
thought about me.
Somebody's thinking about me. Someone who's really busy is thinking about me. And I've been had a pretty big couple of weeks, but I'm always thinking about my team and wondering how they're going and, wanting to check in. And sometimes I can't Zoom them or because I'm in a Zoom. So, just a message, just to check in and kind of take someone's pulse is really, really important. So, and I think the busier people are getting, the more that stuff's falling away. But actually, you need to be, and we talked about being thoughtful and deliberate before, planning out your day, even if you have to write yourself a sticky note and stick it to your laptop and just to remind yourself, check in with a few people, or if you're online in the evening and you can see people are on, send them a message and say, hey, knock off. I'm going to knock off too. Let's just knock off. Or starting a meeting talking about how was the long weekend? Actually, just making some space at the start of the meeting just for a conversation. And probably these are all things people are doing and they're probably thinking, wow, this isn't rocket science. But I actually think we need to just stop and just remember that human connection is a really important part of leadership. And if you're not connecting with your team, then you're not leading. You're just going to meetings. That's what you're doing. That's not your job.
Such an important message. Really important. I really want to kind of emphasize that. And one of the things that I find it really kind of hard to understand, but it seems to be quite common, is what you've said, that when there's a Zoom meeting, we're going in and we're almost robotic in a sense. We're not paying enough attention to those niceties or, so there's no point, as a leader, there's no point thinking about your people. I'm waking up in the middle of the night thinking about what you haven't done for them. If they don't know that you're doing that, that's such a waste of effort, isn't it? Such a waste of effort and opportunity.
I
So I
think you're
love
right.
that, just message people, just when you think about them, what's the quick way that you can let them know that you are? Just a quick question. How are you? What's going on?
Exactly. And it doesn't, I mean, that shouldn't replace still having catch-ups and one-on-ones with people, but I guess it's in this COVID environment. The more you connect, the more connection points you have with someone, I think the better job you're doing. I think it's being really clear on what your purpose is as a leader. What's my purpose? What do I get out of bed for? And actually having a think about that. Do I get out of bed to go to 13 Zooms today? No. Have I got a business
Hopefully
run?
not.
Yes. Who runs the business unit? All my leaders. They're running the business unit. Check in with them, see what they need. Open doors, move things out the way for them. That's kind of how I see my role. So, and as I said to you before, I don't always get this right, and this is almost a reminder to myself, but really just being a bit strict, as I said to you earlier, around making some time to connect with the people who are doing the leading, which are the people that report to you, who are your leaders, then I think you're setting yourself up in the COVID environment very, very well.
Yeah, fantastic. So let's just sort of move to the last part of the conversation on that note, and really focus on the key lessons that you would like to share around leading. Obviously, there have been a number of them interspersed in our conversation so far, but key messages for leadership and inclusive leadership would be fantastic.
I think the headline one for me, around inclusive leadership is don't pay lip service to it. Don't tell people you're an inclusive leader and go to courses and share articles and do all that. That's good, but actually take some action, do something demonstrable so people can see this is what this looks like. You know, if you want to, we've done some really great work at Essential Energy. We've set up a Women from the Field group. We're getting different PPE in. You know, they're only simple things, they're not earth-shattering things, but we've set up some really great mentoring connections. So people are having the opportunity to have formal relationships with people they might not even come across in our organization in their day-to-day work. We're very geographically dispersed. So even just getting our women from the field to even see each other on Zoom, you know, many of them had never even met each other because they're one end of the state to the other. Having ways of disposing of sanitary items when you're in the field. We've got a respectful workplace campaign just kicking off. We're really excited about this. Kicks off tomorrow. All those sorts of things. You know, don't judge people by their words, judge them by their actions. And I
Actions,
think they're the sorts of things that all little things that collectively roll up to really great us taking action and demonstrating. You know, our leadership group is saying we want to be inclusive leaders. We've attended the Inclusion Influencers course. We've taken some good things away, and we're actually going to go and actually do them
do
in our
something.
environment and making sure that the people that are in the diverse groups in our teams are called a mechanism to give us feedback so we can be better and continue to be better instead of just thinking, well, you know, I'm an inclusive leader, I might put that on my LinkedIn profile. Actually, what am I doing to be inclusive and what am I thinking about or doing differently or changing so that I can be an inclusive leader? And if people are thinking, I don't even really know what an inclusive leader is, then going away and finding out what that is and seeing how you can adapt or adopt that. Or seeing someone who is, as we talked about earlier in mentoring, and sending them a message and saying, hey, I can see you doing, you're a really inclusive leader. I really like your style. Can we have a talk about that? Is that something I could learn from you?
Yeah, fantastic. And I also think I really love that do it. Don't talk about it, just get on and do it. And I also think the thing that's been kind of wrapped up in what you've been saying, it doesn't have to be really complicated. I mean, I think even just starting one thing, picking one thing, like maybe asking more questions, as you said earlier, to find out a bit more about people and who they are and where they come from, even if they look like you, because they might have lots of interesting differences, is a great, just a great thing to do. So people can start without having to think it's, I need to kind of tick off this list of six different things I need to do and do them perfectly.
Correct. Yeah, I think it's back, perhaps getting back down to the brass tacks of what's important to you as a leader and what's important to the people that are in my leadership team, and hearing the voice of everyone and kind of going, well, what's real and tangible that I could do to make a difference? But I don't need to do it by myself. As I said, it doesn't need to be a personal crusade. But I think the other thing is, and I think I may have already mentioned this, but I think as you grow as a leader, you get more comfortable making people uncomfortable. Because sometimes you need to actually really start driving an inclusion and diversity lens through your business. Sometimes you have to get a bit uncomfortable when you're talking to people because, you know, there's lots of things that happen that no one really wants to talk about because it's difficult or it's uncomfortable. And sometimes you don't want to be the person that is starting off these uncomfortable conversations. But if it's not you, then who is it? So, you know, I think that's okay. It takes a little bit of confidence to do it. And maybe if you're going to make someone uncomfortable, you might want to ring them, as we talked about earlier, because you can pick up the nuances in the. I'm not saying about being aggressive, but I think some of the things that we've seen happening in our Parliament House and other areas around Australia have made a lot of people really uncomfortable. So it's a good time to be having these conversations and really bringing some of these things forward.
And I think one of the things about that is being prepared to step into that discomfort, and maybe your own discomfort more than others. But what do you do to manage the level of discomfort that others feel when you start that conversation? So we're going to start a conversation about sexual harassment, Within, you know, the danger is people think, oh, do you think I'm a harasser, or do you think I've been harassed? Or, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that kind of goes on. So what might be one tip that you would give about how to kind of manage the discomfort to be productive?
I think to manage the discomfort to be productive, I think you need to name it. I think you need to put it out there and put it on the table and say, "Hey, I know this is uncomfortable." And just name it and make it real instead of kind of pretending it's not there and that, you know, the elephant squashing us all up against the room, against the
Yeah,
wall in
the
the room,
walls, yeah.
because nobody wants to mention it. I think it's okay to say, "Hey, I want to talk about this." And it I know it's really uncomfortable, and let's just put it out there that it is. And then it almost kind of sets that frame that everyone's, you're almost allowing people to be uncomfortable by naming it and acknowledging it. So, you know, that would be my tip. You know, sometimes those conversations don't go as well because people get very defensive, or they, or well, defensive and kind of indicating that that doesn't happen here. What are you talking about? Why are we even? This is rubbish. Everyone here is wonderful. And maybe having a story to tell. I think if you can kind of tell a story and make something real, it brings it to life for people. It might only be some, it might not be to the extent of some of the terrible things that we've seen happen in our communities in recent times, but any sort of personal story, I think, can kind of bring that to life. It might not be your own story, it might be a story someone's told you that has allowed you to share it, to kind of bring those things to life rather than saying, there's sexual harassment, I've seen it on the news, so let's fix it here. But actually, kind of identifying in our environment, in our working environment, here's where the issues are and here's how we might be able to address it together. And I think inviting from the person who might be feeling uncomfortable, what's your perspective on this? How do you feel about it? Have you had an experience? Maybe it'd be somewhere else. Maybe it's someone's partner or child or auntie, or do you know what I mean? I think using storytelling really can remove a little bit of that discomfort as well.
And then just the opportunity to talk about, even if it doesn't happen here, and we know it doesn't, what do we do to make sure that that continues to be the case?
Correct.
Or
Yeah,
how
we've
to
got a great
support colleagues
environment.
on.
How do we continue that? How do we
How
bottle
can
that
we share
up?
that with others?
Yeah,
Fantastic.
exactly.
Emily, thank you so much. Any last kind of parting tip, lesson, or
Oh, a leadership
piece
lesson,
of
parting tip. I
leadership?
feel like it should be
You've
something really
shared
amazing.
so many. No, so many great ones, so you can repeat one.
Can I? Oh, thank you. Oh, no, you know what? I do have one, and it's a little controversial one to finish off with, I think, and this is perhaps more in my earlier career, but I think often women feel like they have to compete against women to get to the top because there's not many roles at the top. And one that I've a little quote that I've used many, many times is, "The flower doesn't compete against the flower next to it; it just blooms." And I think that goes for anyone. It doesn't males, females, it doesn't matter. You know, your biggest competition is yourself. And you know, I think it's really important as a leader to be promoters of those that are around you. Not you to get to the top, you do not need to step on anyone. To be a good leader, you need to really genuinely care about your people and do the very best job you can. You are your only competition.
Yeah,
So.
that's right. And the competition doesn't come from the other flowers.
No, exactly.
Brilliant. That's perfect. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. I know there have been a lot of challenges that your organisation has faced with bushfires and floods as well as COVID. So I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing such great wisdom with us. It's been a delightful conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Karen.